Hey up everybody, my name's Joshua Morrison, director of Johnny Mozza's Lessons in Confidence. Today I want to talk a little bit about the political division that's kind of going on, not just in this country but in every country that seems to be under the sun, right? So there's this idea of the left and the right, and it all came about long ago in a time long forgotten called the French Revolution, right? So when the French Revolution happened and Napoleon came in, I can't remember if he was already in for a wee bit, but the point was they did this big court hearing to sort of figure out what the future of the country was going to be. And they had the monarchists sat on the right side of this courtroom and the Republicans sat on the left side of this courtroom, right? And so the left side of this courtroom was advocating for progress and, you know, the abolition of the monarchy and the foundation of a governmental republic and all that kind of stuff. And the right side of this courtroom was advocating for, you know, the keeping of the status quo and the maintaining of the monarchy and that kind of thing, right? And so these two sides of this one very outdated regional issue has sort of blown up into this overarching political spectrum that we place everything, every person and every kind of idea onto. If you see a politician, you can kind of place them on this political compass graph where you've got four quadrants. You've got liberal left on the bottom left, you've got liberal right on the bottom right, you've got authoritarian right on the upper right, and then you've got authoritarian left on the upper left, right? And these all are very, very differing political ideologies. But then politics is more than just what's in under the scope of the spectrums of economic management and authority versus liberty. So we've got a lot of different visions for the future. Everyone has a different vision for the future, and we kind of made this political spectrum up a wee bit to sort of get people to kind of group together so that we can have a bit more of a singular, holistic vision for the future. So now, instead of having like 8 billion visions for the future, we've got 4, plus some weird ones that don't really fit in, plus some spirituality, you know, that kind of thing. So where I find issue with this is in the fact that it's very awkward to find where you are with all the little nuances of your mind and your worldview, to just place yourself on a spectrum, on a graph, like you're a pinpoint on a chart. So say you're someone who is a Christian and you're very, you know, pro-life in terms of abortion. You think that abortion is murder, right? But at the same time, you're very much advocating for the erasing of racial injustice in society, right? Where are you on the political spectrum? Are you on the left? Are you on the right? Are you authoritarian or are you libertarian? I wouldn't be able to tell you because those two things are on opposite sides, so they kind of cancel each other out, but you're not in the middle. You have two very strong opposing forces, but they shouldn't necessarily be opposing because I don't see why it's, you know, contradictory to be pro-life and anti-racism or anti, like, you know, DEI or whatever the fuck it is these days, right? So you've already got, you know, all of your own little ideas and thoughts on every single issue that there is in the world, right? And I imagine that you have thousands, if not tens of thousands, of individual little opinions on things that make up the grand whole of who you are, right? And a lot of those things won't neatly fit themselves onto a graph, onto a chart, onto some kind of political fucking compass, right? And this is where I find a bit of an issue with the current state of political discourse, is that it feels like we're trying to place everyone into a certain category. We're trying to label people as, like, you're left or you're right or you're a libertarian or you're a socialist or you're a communist or whatever, right? Like, you're like, there's only like 8 things that you can be. There's only 8 ways of seeing the world, and you have to pick one of them, right? And it's just weird because I think we all have, you know, days where we're maybe more right-wing than left-wing, or where we're more left-wing than right-wing. We have days where we think, oh, the government should just ban that. And we have other days where we're like, oh, stop taxing me, man. You know, like, whenever I get, you know, my tax bill coming, I immediately become a libertarian for like a week. And then once I've paid all the taxes and stuff, and I'm getting a bit more money, and I immediately become more of a left-wing type. And then it just kind of works like that. You know, you're constantly ebbing and flowing. You're not just one thing for all of time. Like Bernie Sanders doesn't wake up in the exact, you know, model of what you think Bernie Sanders does every single fucking day of his life, you know? Some day you might wake up and think, God, was I wrong on that? And then he'll maybe wake up the day after that and go, actually, no, I was right. And then he might wake up the day after that and go, yeah, but, oh, now I've got to support Joe Biden. Oh, well, that feels like selling out a wee bit. And then he'll wake up the day after that and go, okay, let's just get it over with and support him because that's what needs to be done for the sake of the country, right? And I don't know. There's a lot of political division that's being sown throughout this country, the United Kingdom, but also in like every country, right? And I don't know where it particularly stems from. I think it stems from a few different things. One, I think the internet has a big part to play in this, in the fact that, you know, now with social media and stuff, anyone can just talk to anyone. And, you know, the biggest mentalists in the world can just have a discussion with one another and then figure out all that connects these certain mentalists and use that to leverage their platform, you know, in terms of, I guess, ratings or views or seeing how many people can engage with the way that they think and start to agree with them or add to their little discourse. It's all about the discourse and about trying to talk about stuff endlessly but never solving anything. We're always going on, oh yeah, we need to stop corruption, oh we need to sort out war, oh we need to sort out this, oh we need to sort out that. But we prefer to talk about it rather than actually get it done, because none of us particularly want to go into a war zone and start giving out food to starving children. None of us want to go fight in a fucking war and die for our country, really. I mean, yeah, people say it, but I don't think they actually want to. Like, I don't want to die for my country. Why? I like being alive. You know, like, why would I do that? And then there's people that will disagree with that vehemently, and they would like die for their country in a heartbeat, and they'll probably think that I'm some kind of, I don't know, traitor or coward for not wanting to do that. And that's a different side of the political compass thing, where you're maybe over here, but you're not always over here. Maybe you're like that, you're patriotic and nationalistic and all that stuff, but at the same time, you're advocating for progress in social reform and social welfare state kind of thing. But at the same time, you want a nationalist country, but you want it to be politically progressive as well. So how do you meld all of those things together? Like, I've got various political opinions that kind of contradict each other. You know, in not in the sense that they directly contradict, but in the sense that I've got some political opinions that are kind of part of the mouthpiece of the left, and I've got a couple of that are part of the mouthpiece of the right, but I don't identify with them necessarily from the point of view of the mouthpiece, but from my own internal logic, which then has to be sort of melded and applied to these external political ideologies and forces that are just collations of people at the end of the day. I mean, all the left is just a load of people with blue hair, and all the right is a load of people with blonde hair and blue eyes. So what are we going to do in terms of unsewing the political division in this country? Because social media is one part of it. The general, you know, fear-mongering of the news and stuff like that is another part of it. And then, you know, government doesn't really help either, because it's always capitulating to pressure from outside forces, whether that be, you know, taking bribes from corporate interests, whether that be, you know, getting rid of someone because of media, you know, pressure, whether that be from an internal party conflict, and there's two like factions in the party, like there is in like the Labour Party, for instance, where there's the more Corbynite sort of area of the Labour Party, and then there's more the Starmerite or the Blairite kind of region of the Labour Party, and they don't really get on, but yet they are one party, and they're the thing that are actually ruling the country at the moment. And the Conservatives are very similar, where they have the more, you know, what's the guy that came after Thatcher? Him. Like that kind of Thatcherism, that's certainly one side of it, with Liz Truss and that coming in. Then you've got your more Cameronite kind of things, and then you've got like your Boris Johnson populism kind of thing going on. And it's all happening under the same umbrella of the Conservative Party. And similarly, another thing is happening under the umbrella term of the Labour Party. And they're similarly contradictory. It's like how during Brexit, the Conservatives were both advocating for Brexit and against it. David Cameron was advocating for Remain, and the Conservative Party was officially campaigning for Remain, and yet, you know, significant members, prominent members of the Conservative Party as well, and a lot of them were advocating for the Leave Party. And so it seemed like the Conservative Party was kind of at odds with itself, because it's not necessarily an all-encompassing contradictory ideology, but there are so many little facets of the nuances of our world that you can't just lump them all into one big hill and just climb this hill and get to the top of it, because it'd be like chucking like a load of garbage, like a bicycle and like a Ford Escort and just a load of fucking dirt and mounds and stuff just into one big pile and then climbing it and then being surprised when it all collapses under its own weight. There's so much to have an opinion on. There's so much to discuss. There's so much to think about. There's so much out there to reel you in and get you, agitated and annoyed and stuff like that. Like recently I've started getting annoyed because I've been on Facebook. I'm seeing a load of like pro-life fucking astroturfing campaigns coming from America, right? And I really despise that they're trying to regress us back into the past. And I don't like that. And it's getting me incensed about something that if I didn't know about this, I would probably be happier. But then if I didn't know about it and I was happier and I wasn't able to do something about it, then maybe these pro-life campaigns would still be here and then they would actually take hold and maybe, abortion would end up getting banned in this country. But at the same time, me knowing about it doesn't seem to me doing anything. It's not like I'm going out there like sorting out, abortion rights for everyone. I'm not doing that. I'm just sitting here yabbering on a fucking tree stump. So what does knowing about stuff and being politically aware add to things if you have no political power? Unless you're going to go out to protests every week, unless you're going to join some kind of Viva la Resistance or something, what is it you're actually meant to do? Because I made a video a little while ago about how it sort of feels like we're all becoming very complacent in how destitute our future seems, and that we need to do something. A lot of people were like, oh, it's not up to the individual, and they kind of joked about the fact that I said that we need to stand up and do something. They're like, oh yeah, you want us to stand up and do something? What exactly? Oh, this is just, social media influencer fucking garbage, wannabe revolutionary fucking bullshit, And I do understand that, because yeah, it is a little bit me just saying, well, we do have to do something, I don't know what. But at the same time, what's the point of being so politically aware if we're not going to do anything? If the point is the individual has no impact to the world around us, that we can't do anything, why should we fucking bother being politically aware if we can't do anything? What's the point? I don't really know the answer to that. That's why I'm sort of saying that we need to try and do something. I've no idea what. But when I do say that, I think the first thing that comes to mind is help your local community. Do litter picking, go to your local litter picking group, stuff like that. Help clean the river, all that kind of stuff. Because you can make a change with that, with just you and your body and your mind. You can make a change with that. You can't sort out fucking Ukraine war. How are you going to do that with just you, with no money to fucking pay off a load of politicians or whatever? You can't do that. Where are you going to go? Fucking join those people they make documentaries about where they go and immigrate into Ukraine so that they can fight for Ukraine and stuff like that. You're going to start doing that? No, you're not. You're just going to sit there on the internet spouting off, just like I do, right? And what is all of us sitting around spouting about stuff going to achieve? I don't know. I don't think it's going to do very much. And this is why I feel like, because it's so contradictory with regards to all of the messaging that's around us, right? Everything that's out there, on every different topic, it feels like
Hi, I'm Darren Marlar, host of the Weird Darkness podcast. I want to talk about the most important tool in my podcast belt. Spreaker is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to record, host, and distribute your show everywhere, from Apple Podcasts to Spotify. But the real game changer for me was Spreaker's monetization. Spreaker offers dynamic ad insertion. That means you can automatically insert ads into your episodes. No editing required. And with Spreaker's programmatic ads, they'll bring the ads to you, and you get paid for every download. This turned my podcasting hobby into a full-time career. Spreaker also has a premium subscription model where your most dedicated listeners can pay for bonus content or early access, adding another revenue stream to what you're already doing. And the best part, Spreaker grows with you. Whether you're just starting out or running a full-blown podcast network, Spreaker's powerful tools scale effortlessly as your show grows. So if you're ready to podcast like a pro and get paid while doing it, check out Spreaker.com. That's That's SPREAKER.com.
Cap our own ideology based on all the information that we see, rather than all the information we see guiding us towards some kind of epiphany. And I'd like it to be the other way around, but then the world is so confusing at the moment, and probably always has been, that I don't know if that's entirely possible. So I understand why people just check out and they don't even bother. And part of me wants to as well, but I just physically can't. And I think, if I did, would I be happier? I'd be like, you know, a dog looks happy all the time, and a dog knows fuck all about the world that's going on. So would it be kind of like that? I don't know. I don't have the answers, and I would never pretend to have all the answers. And if you think that I've got any of the answers, then stop thinking that, because I don't. I don't know much. I'm not like some kind of guru or something like that where I can impart some like real like education onto you. I don't know. I know a bit of geopolitics just as a hobby, but nothing that like I could actually, you know, respectably tell onto you. So I don't know what to actually make of all this stuff going on. I'm just trying to figure it all out for myself, just like you are, just like we all are. We're all trying to figure out the right answers, and we're all getting lost along the way. And we will eventually get past all of this, hopefully. You know, we will eventually sort out most of the issues. Just like how 10 years ago, you were probably worried about something that now you look back and you're like, what? Oh, that was such an easy thing to fix. Why was I ever so worried about it? But at the time, it felt like it was the end of the world. But now, with the perspective of context and the ability to see it from a top-down perspective, from the context of the being in the future or the present looking back at the past, you're able to see what the issue was. Like, right now, it all feels so confusing. But, you know, in 40 years, when the ITV2 documentary about today comes out, it will all make a lot more sense. And so, you know, even though it might seem really confusing now, it won't always feel this confusing. Maybe the future, when it's the present in the future, like when it's the year 2060, you sitting there in 2060, it will feel confusing, but the year 2025 won't feel that confusing anymore. It'll feel as simple as looking back in 1940 and going, oh, the Nazis were bad. It's like, yeah, we all know that. I hope we all know that. And but back then, in the 1940s and the late 1930s, people probably felt just as confused as we do now, because the world seems so weird and scary, and what's going on with all these new like communists and fascists and all that stuff? What's going on? What do we make of all this? And we have to come up with an opinion whilst the events are still unfolding, you know? And now we're in the same kind of position, not necessarily that fascism is rising, although I do think that it is, but if you disagree, it's not just about it being particular to fascism, it's about going into the unknown of the future, and how when you have the perspective of context from the point of view of the future, you'll be able to look back and go, oh yeah, it was actually quite simple. That those were the bad guys, those were the good guys. But now we have no idea who the good guys and the bad guys are. We see, oh, that person's good, that person's bad, but our minds might change after the fact. We don't know with the benefit of hindsight. And my own political ideology is a little bit, you know, contradictory, just like anyone's is. And it's about trying to smoothen out those contradictions and trying to figure out where I can make little, not sacrifices, but where I can sort of let an issue go, because actually now they kind of have a point about that and that kind of thing. You know, you're constantly changing yourself and figuring out what is right and what is wrong. And if you want to call that flip-flopping, that's fine, but I'm not a politician, so it doesn't matter. Flip-flopping is just like water off a duck's back wearing flip-flops, so. Yeah, I suppose that's the video. Leave your comments in the description below about, you know, what do you make of this? Because I know on that video that I made, that was the last one about politics and stuff, I had a few people sort of go, normally I like your videos, but this one kind of missed the mark. So this is kind of addressing that, and like, you know, I'm sometimes going to miss the mark, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to throw another dart. And maybe if it misses the dartboard, it will miss the dartboard. And eventually I'll realise I'm not very good at darts and I'll try something else. And that's fine. I like darts. Darts is quite fun. I played it in Turkey, but there was a big German shepherd that was lying in on the floor in the way. And so you had to throw the dart over. I mean, we tried to shoo him out of the way, but he would just come back and just lie there again. He was quite cute. He was really fluffy. But yeah, I'm not very good at darts, actually. I lost 4 out of the 5 games. But the one game I did win, I did thrash him, so. So yeah, thank you very much for watching this. Hope you all have a good rest of the day. Take care. Love you all. And yeah, leave your thoughts about this, about the state of the world and the state of the future and where we're going and all that sort of stuff. So take care, everybody. Bye-bye. Hey up everybody, my name's Joshua Morrison, director of Johnny Mozzles, all lessons and confidence. Today I want to talk a little bit about the lowest point in my filmmaking career. I wanted to get into some of the details, some of the nitty gritty, and explain why it was such a low point, explain some of the circumstances around it, and explain what the point of the thing I was trying to make actually was. So let's get straight into it. So in April of 2021, I just finished filming my first feature film called A Sheffield Psychedelic. At the time it was called Psychedelic Involvement. I renamed it after the fact to a name that was just better in every way. And right as I came off of that, I had this very euphoric high from the accomplishment, because we'd done 6 days filming, very, very intense days of filming. I'm talking like 8 a.m. to like 10 p.m. days filming, pretty much 6 days in a row. Going all around Sheffield, which is a place I've never been, you know, doing so many things, talking to so many new people. Must have had upwards of 50 people working on that film, so that was a lot of people to interact with and meet and to work with on that feature film, and I'm incredibly proud of that feature film. And when I got off of that feature film, I had this sort of feeling like I was God of the universe almost, and I could do anything. So I immediately got to work casting and setting up filming for my next feature film, which at the time was going to be The Nukes We Brought, which was a film generally about two young people that kind of are a couple, and they go around and they have a nice little night just talking, and it's very inspired by films like Before Sunrise, I guess Before We Go, and stuff like that, where it's just two people sort of interacting across a single night and just, you know, the things that they talk about and their worldviews and that kind of thing, just learning about them as people. And that was what the film was about. And I got straight into casting it, not really giving myself any time to actually sit and rejuvenate from the energy that I'd expended on Sheffield Psychedelic. I got immediately into it. I cast the man and the woman. I got a DP, I got sound guys, I got most of the locations. And we were going to start filming in May. So that was a month after I finished filming on Sheffield Psychedelic. And I spent an awful lot of time on this, expending all that energy that I'd gotten from that euphoric high. And about a week before we were due to start filming on the first day, I kind of looked at everything that I'd gotten together, and I thought about the film that I was actually going to set out and make. And I thought about the results that were going to come from the project that I was embarking on. And I decided that it wasn't worth it. And I just thought that this isn't going to make a good film. And I thought, if it's not going to make a good film, I shouldn't force myself to make a film that I know isn't going to be any good just for the sake of making it. So I cancelled the project at that point and put it back into the time capsule to be reopened at a later date. And I'm still set to reopen that time capsule at some point in the future. And after that, I was a little bit lost and I didn't really know quite what to do. And this opportunity opened up to direct something. We didn't know what it was, but we had a location at this guy's house in Essex. And I can't really provide like vast amount of detail because there's so many circumstances that kind of surround it, but I'll try and get into everything that I feel comfortable with getting into, because it's quite a strange story that involves something called the IMDb Wars, and it also involved people calling me up and threatening to come to my house in a van with their son to do something, to give me a stern talking to. So that was quite weird. So yeah, there's an awful lot of strangeness going on around this film. This is not a normal film. We didn't even know what it was going to be. There was no script, there was no nothing like that. And I don't mean there was no script in like we set out to do an improv-y kind of thing in a nice wholesome-y kind of way. This was just laziness. We didn't have a script, and so we were just going to go, and we had some kind of idea. And basically, I was told by these people that we spend a day filming this thing. And they had contact with London Live, which London Live is a TV channel on Freeview, which is, so it's proper telly, right? It's Channel 8, I think. And, you know, they get, like, quite a lot of low-budget things on there, so it didn't seem completely out of the ordinary. So I kind of jumped on this opportunity quite naively. And I got to work thinking, what can we do with the location that we have? Because I had been to this location before, because we'd filmed there for a film called World Cup Ice. So I knew what the location looked like. I knew what the kind of immediate surroundings looked like. And I knew the various actors that we had access to and the people that we had access to. Right, and I knew that we were going to be there for one night, and the idea was we would get there around 7 p.m. and we would film until like 8 in the morning, and then we would go home, then we would come back at like 7 p.m. the next day, and we would do the same thing again. So we'd do 2 days filming in a row to make whatever it was, and whatever came out of it we would edit and then send off to London Live, and then London Live, we're going to screen it in February of the next year. At this point we're at June 2021, I think it's like June the 7th or something like that, right? So we get there, and I have kind of come up with this vague idea, because I've been watching The Royal Family at that point. There's a TV show called The Royal Family that aired in the 90s and the early 2000s, and it's very naturalistic kind of thing, showing a family that are up in, I think they're in Manchester or something like that. And basically it just gets into their real, almost real life. They're a fictional family, but they feel very grounded and down to earth, and they've got a mother, a dad, and a couple of kids, and it's very true to life. And I think anyone that comes from up north probably has a decent, you know, relation to the film, to the series, sorry. And I really liked The Royal Family, and I watched the first series of it, and I thought I'd love to do something kind of in that same vein, where it's just capturing reality. And I wanted to take it even further, because obviously that's a scripted television thing. I wanted to take it even further and make it almost like a fictional Big Brother. Obviously Big Brother is basically fiction, but I wanted to set out to make something that was like a fictional Big Brother, the TV series, where it's sort of, you know, it's trying to capture real life and the little like things that come between two like various people that are forced to live in one house. And so I came up with this general idea, this general concept, where there was this sort of gathering of friends, a reunion of friends, and there's loads of them. And they've all, you know, they're all in their late 30s, early 40s, and they've all kind of come back together, and they've all, most of them have kids, and they've been all around the world, and they've got various jobs, and they've got like a life of experiences to discuss and stuff like that. And there's this one main character who doesn't have any of that, who has done nothing with their life, who feels very like ashamed of that, and they feel like they've missed out, and they're lashing out this emotion in the form of anger at everyone around them. And they have to kind of learn to get out of their comfort zone to try and, you know, gain these experiences, because that's what all these other people did. They left their comfort zone in order to gain these experiences that they can now tell whilst they're back in their comfort zone. And this guy hasn't done that, so he has nothing to discuss. And that was kind of the idea for the film. And the film was going to be called Join the Real World. And we decided it was going to be as long as it turns out being. And I remember saying to the people at the start of the day, if we're lucky and we get, you know, we're really productive and we do a really good job, we could get a small feature film out of this, like a 60-minute sort of thing. And there was a lot of excitement around it. And so we started off and we went and filmed in a Tesco. And we didn't have permission to film in this Tesco or anything, so we did it guerrilla. And there was just a really basic scene where they bump into each other at the Tesco. And what we did, we filmed it by just putting the camera in the trolley and just moving the trolley around. And it was kind of neat because it kind of functioned like a dolly. But it was quite uncomfortable because we didn't have any like permissions or anything like that. We could get kicked out any moment. And it all felt a little bit scuzzy. And I didn't feel particularly comfortable being here.
Hi, I'm Darren Marlar, host of the Weird Darkness podcast. I want to talk about the most important tool in my podcast belt. Spreaker is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to record, host, and distribute your show everywhere, from Apple Podcasts to Spotify. But the real game changer for me was Spreaker's monetization. Spreaker offers dynamic ad insertion. That means you can automatically insert ads into your episodes. No editing required. And with Spreaker's programmatic ads, they'll bring the ads to you, and you get paid for every download. This turned my podcasting hobby into a full-time career. Spreaker also has a premium subscription model where your most dedicated listeners can pay for bonus content or early access, adding another revenue stream to what you're already doing. And the best part, Spreaker grows with you. Whether you're just starting out or running a full-blown podcast network, Spreaker's powerful tools scale effortlessly as your show grows. So if you're ready to podcast like a pro and get paid while doing it, check out Spreaker.com. That's That's SPREAKER.com.
I felt like, hang on, I'm the director. Why am I the one that feels like I'm being put out? Because it wasn't my idea to film in this Tesco. I was just, you know, making use of the things that were allotted to me, essentially. We were being taken places by these people, and I was doing the filming. And I felt really bad about a lot of it. And the footage that came out wasn't particularly great. It wasn't even white balanced correctly. It looks incredibly yellow. So we did that. We had that little scene. And then we had a little scene in a car after that, which is a really crap car scene. And then we go to the main location where we spend most of the film. And it's this really sort of grotty kind of house that's really, really beautiful to look at on film. It really fits the film. And we had these few characters, there were just people that lived there. And it was a bit difficult trying to work around the things that were being allotted because we were just in someone's house. And it was a weird house because it was almost like a place where loads of people were just coming in and out all the time, just visiting. And it felt like the royal family in that regard, where people are just coming in and just nipping in for a cup of tea or whatever and just like having a bit of a chat and then fucking off again. And it, I mean, that is neat, but it kind of gets in the way of filming. And I remember there was this one woman that came, and I'm going to call him the producer, who plays one of the roles in this film. He was sort of saying, trying to get people on board of doing this film. I remember we were all out having a cigarette, and he came up and he was like, "I've got the bird interested." And "I've got the bird to start doing stuff." And I did not like the way that he said that. "I've got the bird doing stuff." And it just really like unsettled me, and I felt really grimy and uncomfortable in this situation. Right? And this woman, this poor woman who had just come to visit some friend, is now like being forced to act as a runner on this film set. And I'm having to sit and give her like directions and stuff, and I really didn't like doing it because she kept coming up and asking me like, "Is there anything that you need doing?" And I just kept saying to her, "No, there's nothing that you need doing." And she would sort of help out a little bit here and there. So I thought, okay, maybe it's best that I just give her a little bit of direction, just so that, you know, I'm playing into this a little bit. Well, I didn't like it at all. And we were filming, and I realised that I was just filming people pissing about, doing absolutely nothing of any worth. And we filmed up until about like 2 a.m. doing that. And then we took a bit of a break. And during this break, I went outside for a cigarette and I went away on my own and I just sort of kneeled down against the wall and I was having my cigarette and I was just kind of, "What the fuck am I doing here? What the fuck am I doing here?" And I really could not answer that question. I was like, "Is this what I am? Is this the level of filmmaker I am? Am I like I know I'm a nobody. I know I'm not anything special, but this is pathetic, right? I'm filming with my equipment. Everything is my equipment. The only thing that these people have provided is a location and some actors, right? There's no release forms. There's no like documentation. There's no script. There's no lighting. There's no nothing. There's no crew because the crew are made up of random people that just turn up. That this person manipulates and pressures into helping out with this film, and it felt like all the fun of filmmaking was being taken out of it for me, and I absolutely fucking detested it, right? And then we went out and we did a bit more filming, and we got to about 7 a.m. and about 5 a.m. I thought, "I don't give a shit about this. I really don't care what the result of this is. I'm not putting my name to this." So I managed to get through the day, and on the way back, me and the person I was going there with, we said to each other, "We're not going back the next day, are we? We're not going back. I don't give a shit." And they were like, yeah, fuck this. And so I started putting together what I had into a timeline, and it was just shit. It was just people dossing about, doing nothing. The lighting was terrible. The film looks awful. This whole time, the person that had sort of arranged all of this is calling me up and talking about, like, well, they're not even calling me, they're calling the person that I went there with and talking about London Live this and Channel 4 that and how they have a meeting and, like, trying to get into the meeting, and then he starts saying, oh, Leo, you guys aren't at the meeting, and then he starts moving what the meeting actually is about. At first it's a proper meeting, and then it becomes just like, oh, it's just a pub thing, and then it's not even a real meeting. We hadn't even confirmed the meeting. We hadn't even confirmed anything with London Live. And as more of this happened, I started to get, you know, I started to wake up to the fact that there wasn't going to be anything on London Live. There wasn't going to be any kind of premiere. There wasn't going to be any TV showing, because look at the fucking film. The film is a load of ass. It's absolute dog shit, this film. And you can find it, if you Google Join the Real World, short film, you will find the film. I've taken my name off. I am technically the director. I have a very small appearance in it, which I actually completely forgot about. And I'm absolutely thoroughly ashamed of that film. So what I did is I took my name off, and when it came to exporting it and sending it off, I didn't even bother. I didn't even put the sound in. That's how little I cared. I just threw all the video clips into a timeline, put zero effort into editing, just vague little cuts here and there so it looked sort of like a film. It's a 17-minute thing, so it's not even fit for TV, because it should be like 23 minutes for TV. I could have made a 23-minute cut, but I just didn't give a shit. I did not care. And I even sent the compressed version. I didn't even bother sending a proper version of the film. I just took the compressed versions of the videos and exported it as the lowest setting I could, so I could get it out ready and done. I exported it and edited it and exported it in under 2 hours and just sent it off and just forgot about it. And after that, I started getting involved. I didn't get involved in, but I was kind of dragged into this thing called the IMDb Wars, which had been going on in the background a little bit regarding a few films that I've been working on. And there's a possibility that it'll come back. And me talking about this is really probably not the smartest business move, because it means now that it's going to probably come into affecting a Sheffield Psychedelic. And I'm worried that it'll come into effect in some of the other films. But basically, there were a lot of people that were going back and forth, one-starring films and making many, 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 many accounts. I'm talking hundreds of accounts, buying accounts from Russia and Thailand and places like that, just buying thousands of accounts and using them all to one-star these films. Right? And if you go on many of these films, you will see that it's like, you know, 10-star, maybe there's like 10%, then 9-star, 8-star, 7-star, they're all kind of normal. And then there's a fair few 3-star and 4-stars, because look, I'm going to be honest, most of those films aren't particularly great, right? They don't deserve 7, 8 stars. They do deserve 2, 3, 4 stars, but they don't deserve endless 1-star reviews and reviews that say shit like, Swae Lee is a god. Yeah, I just named it. I've been trying to not name names, but you know what? If you put that stuff in your fake IMDb reviews, I have no choice but to name names, right? So you get stuff like that. You get so many things like Swae Lee is a fucking god. You get stuff like dissing out, the various people that are working on the film. You get people slagging off all the people that had nothing to do with anything, that are just trying to do a job, that are trying to work their job on this film set. And I ended up having to get dragged into it, because I have to defend my films a little bit. I made 10 IMDb accounts just to 10-star them. And as I made the 10th one, I thought, I'm not doing this. I don't give a shit. If they want to be one-starred, if they're so petty that they want to waste their fucking lives on this, then they can do that. Then they can make my film a 1-star, if that's what they want so bad, right? Because it's an IMDb review, and if they're that pathetic that that's what they're going to try, then that's what they're going to try, and I'm not going to waste my life on trying to fight it, right? So this went on for a long time, and there was an awful lot of back and forth, and then so many personal details that I can't even get to. And it just really kind of fucked me up in that it destroyed my love of filmmaking. All the wholesomeness and the innocence that came with making films with my friends and putting them on YouTube and collaborating with the people I care about and to make cool stories for people to enjoy. All of that was gone. Now it's a commodification. Now it's just content. We're pumping out content for views, to clicks, for the idiots that watch this shit. And treating the audience like they're fucking stupid. And they're not. You're the audience, right? Are you stupid? No, you're not. You're an intelligent person. You can see right through a fake IMDb review. You can see right through endless one-star reviews. I'm talking both ways, negative and positive. You can see if someone's, reviewed their own thing loads and loads of times. It's so obvious. You know, because it's one, there's a few ways you can tell, right? So first off, if you click on the profile, the only things that they have reviewed or interacted with are the films that are related to the filmmaker. So say filmmaker has made film A, film B, and film C. These fake accounts will only have discussed film A, film B, and film C, right? That's all they will have done, right? Number two, you can tell that they're fake because they are just utterly gushing in a really just sort of phony sort of way, almost like they're written by ChatGPT. When this was going on, this was before ChatGPT was around, so, you know, it wasn't being used, it wasn't being done through ChatGPT, this was all being done manually. So a lot of the reviews are really short, and a lot of reviews aren't like that. And if you got a review, you know, a review won't shy away from naming negative stuff here and there, right? And they will discuss things from a way that it doesn't look like they know the people personally. And if you know yourself, if you are yourself, it's hard to act like you don't know who you are, right? And, you know, the best actor in the world can't do that. And this isn't the best actor in the world. These aren't the best actors in the world. These are fucking idiot nobodies, right? Who don't know how to act, who don't know how to play the game of the film industry, who don't know how to make content, as we'll call it, in a very cynical way. They don't know how to create. And so they only want to drag down everyone around them to their level. And I was dragged down to their level. And I looked around and it really destroyed my passion for creativity. And after that, in 2022 and 2023, I didn't make any films because I had no love for it. I made music because it was something that I could just do on my own, get away and not have to collaborate. And because the whole experience had left me very cynical of the industry. And then I realized that this isn't the industry. These are nobodies that want to be part of the industry. And so they fake their way into it. They have like Instagrams where they you know, go to like screenings and not even a screening, they stand outside the screening and just take endless pictures, and then they schedule them out so that it looks like they've been going to loads of different things. They will they'll buy fake cars, not buy, they'll rent out a car or whatever, or borrow a friend's car and pretend to drive it, or actually drive it for a quick little reel, Instagram reel or video or whatever, so they can look like they're rich and successful when they're not, right? Because, you know, driving a fast car is what it's all about. Because, you know, your film that has like 30 reviews that are all fake, but even still 30 reviews on a film and maybe 300 IMDb reviews, and you've got a couple videos with 2,000 views on them and maybe 600 subscribers or whatever, that somehow elicits you the ability to drive a fucking Ferrari knockoff, right? I've got 40,000 subscribers, right? I've got videos with hundreds of thousands of views, right? And I'm still a nobody, right? I've been recognized in the street and I'm still a fucking nobody. And I take ownership of that. I don't mind that. I don't want to be a somebody. I don't chase this image of success. I would rather just be successful. I would rather just live my life as a, you know, fulfillingly as possible and try and make the world as good a place as it's possible to be for the people that I care about. And that's why I'm making this video, because someone that I care about has recently come under an online attack. And I think it's to do with the people that were involved with this Join the Real World project. I think it, honest to God, is that. And I'm not going to go into any details about who this person is that's getting attacked, because they won't want me to, and I will respect those wishes. And I feel responsible in a way, because I've allowed these people to be platformed and I have accepted these people and I have tolerated these people. And if you ever heard the paradox of tolerance, basically the paradox of tolerance is it's usually thrown around in a sort of political sort of sphere, like, you know, oh, if the whole idea of, you know, the left is to be tolerant, how come they don't tolerate us racists, right? Well, the reason they don't is because you're not tolerant. So if we tolerate the intolerant, then the tolerant will take power and then they'll remove all the tolerance from the world. So you can't tolerate intolerance if you want to be a tolerant.
Hi, I'm Darren Marlar, host of the Weird Darkness podcast. I want to talk about the most important tool in my podcast belt. Spreaker is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to record, host, and distribute your show everywhere, from Apple Podcasts to Spotify. But the real game changer for me was Spreaker's monetization. Spreaker offers dynamic ad insertion. That means you can automatically insert ads into your episodes. No editing required. And with Spreaker's programmatic ads, they'll bring the ads to you, And you get paid for every download. This turned my podcasting hobby into a full-time career. Spreaker also has a premium subscription model where your most dedicated listeners can pay for bonus content or early access, adding another revenue stream to what you're already doing. And the best part, Spreaker grows with you. Whether you're just starting out or running a full-blown podcast network, Spreaker's powerful tools scale effortlessly as your show grows. So if you're ready to podcast like a pro and get paid while doing it, check out Spreaker.com. That's Spreaker.com.
Society. And I've tolerated shit for way too fucking long. I've tolerated disgusting, nasty people for far too long. And last year I realized that when a few people had betrayed me in life in a very personal way. There's actually nothing to do with this. This is a totally different situation, a much more personal situation. It's nothing to do with film. And when this happened, I instantly removed the people culpable from my life, instantaneously. And I never looked back, right? And after that, I started to become a lot more thick-skinned and a lot more willing to remove shitheads from my life. And I've removed more shitheads since then. And if I see someone that does something, like, I've removed a few people from my life because they've been, like, sex pests and they've been racist and they've done this and they've done that and they've done nasty shit and they've just been terrible people, right? And so I've taken them out of my life because I don't tolerate that shit anymore, right? And as a result, I think since I've started doing that, the world has started to be kinder to me because I have generally become, a better person in that I won't allow this shit to take hold anymore, right? And this might be the final frontier, is making this video, right? Maybe it's a really stupid idea to make this video, because, you know, I've said I've not named names and I've kind of named names and I've told you what the film is. And, you know, if you want to check out the film and bore yourself to tears, then you're welcome to, because it's not even bad in a fun way. It's just shit. It's a crap film. And what's really sad about it is you can kind of vaguely see my vision behind all the fluff and all the muck. You can just about see my vision in there, desperately clawing for escape to get out, right? And I don't know where this video ends. I don't know what happens at the end of this. I don't know what it is I need to say in order to feel like I can close this out. All I know is that since I started this Johnny Mozza channel and gained this platform, I know why I've gained it. I think it's because I've just been my true self and taking things back to that wholesome, just doing things for the love of it rather than doing things for the sake of content or for gain or for revenue and that kind of thing. And without having to fake it, without, like, everything that I've done, I haven't had to make fake comments or fake likes or do fake reviews on IMDb. I haven't had to do any of that. Why not? Because I actually make stuff that people want to engage with just on the face of it. I don't have to force or manipulate people into watching my stuff. I don't have to trick people into engaging with my content. Unlike some of these fucking twats out there that have to do that, right? And I just think it's absolutely fucking despicable what's happened with regards to this friend of mine that has been facing this online attack, right? I'm absolutely fucking disgusted by it. And this video might not come out for a while. I'm filming this on the 8th of February. And it's going to take a little while of figuring out before this video can actually come out, because there's a few things that I need to sort out in my real life first. But I wanted to make this just so that I can get this story out there to some degree. There's a lot more that I want to get into that I feel like I can't, that I might get into at a later date. And it's just annoying because for multiple years, my love and passion of film was destroyed by this, by these people. And, getting to that thing about people calling me up saying they're going to come beat me up at my house. So that was a thing where I was getting phone calls from private numbers. And you know, if you get a phone call from a private number, it might be important. It might be a dentist. It might be HMRC. It might be anything. So you kind of have to answer them. So That's what they do. They set their number to private. It's kind of people that phone you from their number and you don't answer it, so they'll phone you from a private number so that you answer it, and then they go, ooh, you wouldn't answer me, but you'll answer a private number. Yes, because I don't want to fucking talk to you, idiot. Seriously, like, you do the same thing to other people, right, when they call you and you don't want to call. Use your fucking common sense, right? Like, but they know that. They just want to see you squirm. So, yeah, I was getting these phone calls about someone that apparently owed someone some money, and they were calling me to try and talk to that person, get and basically force them to borrow the money. But there was an awful lot of bullshit, and this person was a bit full of shit anyway. And I didn't know anything about this money. I didn't know anything about anything. It was like 700 quid or something, right? I didn't know anything about this, and I wasn't interested in finding out, right? But I just kept getting more phone calls about it, basically trying to pressure me into doing something that I didn't want to do. I remember getting one phone call, and I just sort of said, I've spoken to the person, they don't know anything about this. And he basically starts going, oh, well, I know you've been talking to him, so I know you're full of shit. And I started, and he starts going, oh, well, I'll be around your fucking house with my son in the van. And I start going, oh, yeah, well, where do I fucking live then? And it's like, oh, you'll find out. Yeah, give me a fucking address then, cunt. Give me a fucking address. Tell me where I live, and I might have a modicum of fucking fear in my body, but you're a fucking nobody, right? And he never told me the address, so I kind of just walked around for a bit for the next couple months, not really scared, but just aware that that had happened, that people want, whether they will or not is actually the main question, and they turns out they never did. They want to come to my house and beat me up, essentially. And that's not fun. I don't like that. I don't like the idea of people coming to beat me up. And you know what? The reason that I'm making this video is because someone that I actually care about is now facing some kind of wrath from all of this. And I feel like it's all my fault. And I don't know what to do. I really don't. I don't know how I should approach this. I don't know if I should go nuclear. I know I pronounce nuclear wrong. Nuclear. I know. Not the point. I don't know if I should go nuclear. I don't know if I should just privately remove all of these people from my life. I don't know if I should tell the full story. I don't know if I should try and forget about it and push it under the rug. I don't know what I should do. But I know I need to do something. Action has to be taken, because inaction is complicity. And I refuse to be complicit in this anymore. And yeah. And now that I have a platform, I will use this platform for good causes. I've already been using it for good causes, like the email band that I've started that's making music and stuff for charity. We haven't raised any money for charity yet, but that is the point of it. So good things are being done, and, you know, I'm trying to inspire people. And I look at all the comments and stuff, and I see that I've been changing lives for the better, even in small ways. And so it's given me motivation and inspiration and to actually create things again, because I feel like I can actually reach people, and I can, but not just for the sake of reaching them, you know? Not just because I want views and I want clicks and I want engagement, but because I want to get a message out to people, because I want people to be inspired, or I want people to laugh, or I want people to, you know, be strapped in their seat, at the edge of their seat, along for the ride. I want that. I don't want to just get a load of fucking clicks and a load of people to sit around going, ooh, you're so brilliant, right? But because they're being manipulated by just seeing a load of other fake comments. So you see a load of fake comments, so you join in on that, right? I hate all this shit. I hate, and I think this whole fake comment thing is so fucking pathetic, right? I remember I did it for a brief span in 2020. I did it for about a month. And I deleted all those comments because I realised how fucking stupid and pathetic it was to lie about the idea that anyone gives a shit about me, right? It's the equivalent of liking your own Facebook post, you know, but worse, so much worse, in that you're doing this to try and manipulate people into thinking you're somebody when you're not, when you're nothing, and you'll always be nothing. And if you don't change your ways, if you don't evolve and realise your past mistakes, then you will never progress. And I've recognised the mistakes that I made by the people that I associated with, right? with the attitudes towards filmmaking that they had. It was so cynical and so corporate, and yet they weren't corporate, they weren't successful, they had nothing, right? They weren't part of the industry. These people were sneaking onto proper film sets and getting kicked off, right? That's how pathetic this is, right? And I'm just thinking, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do, but, and I don't even know why I'm making this video, and maybe this making this video is a massive mistake, and I know I said that earlier and I'm repeating myself, so I'm going to wrap this up by just saying, I worry that with the films that I'm releasing at some point in the future, Sheffield Psychedelic, Johnny Mozz's Lessons in Confidence, I Am Scum, and a few others, right, that I'm going to become the target of these IMDb wars. I'm just going to start facing harassment online from these people. I've not faced any harassment from 40,000 subscribers, none. And I feel like talking about this, I'm going to coincidentally begin getting harassed online. And I know that's going to happen. And I'm making this video essentially as a pre-warning, as a way of showing that I am aware and conscious of this fact. And I don't know what to do, but I know it's going to happen. I'm worried that it's going to happen. Let's say, I don't think I know it's going to happen for a fact, because it's been such a long time since this, and it'll only happen if I go nuclear. If I don't go nuclear, then it'll all get forgotten to time, and I'll just have to make a few little actions behind the scenes to ensure some justice is brought about, and to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again, and to make sure that I never associate with anyone like this in the future. And it's not one person, by the way. This is a collection of about 6 or 7 individuals who know who they are, although I doubt they are watching this video because they don't have the attention span for that kind of thing. If you look at their social medias, it's the biggest load of fake crap out there. They have these huge IMDBs, right, with hundreds of films on them. And I could do a video where I just go through them and just go, fake, 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 fake. That one's real. Fake, 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 fake. Right? I could do that. I could talk about some of the allegations that are going on. The issue is I wish I could, but I don't. I only know about these things from third-hand sources, so they're third-hand sources that I trust, but it's not anything that I have enough to go off of and to discuss in any further detail, so I will leave it there. But that's a cliffhanger, I suppose. Whether we will climb up this cliff or fall off it is to be determined in the coming year. But, yeah, to the people that know who they are, seriously, if you try and fuck with me, I will fuck with you back, and I will make sure that you have nothing left remain. Okay? So, that's going to be the video. It's probably been the angriest I've ever been in a video. So I know I'm generally, not the most... I'm not exactly, what's Mr. Rogers, the super wholesome. Like Joel Haver, for instance, is a lot more wholesome, and he very rarely gets angry. I'm a little bit more, I'd say gritty. In that sense, not that I'm more edgy or anything like that, but I certainly get a bit more agitated and aggravated in general. But it's been the first time I think I've ever been truly pissed off in a video. So that's been fun. Thank you very much for watching. I hope you managed to get some enjoyment out of this. Please, if you have any sort of similar experiences with this sort of thing, please put your comments down below. If you have any experiences with what I'm talking about, whether it's these particular people and you know who I'm talking about and you know the situation that I'm talking about, please leave the comments below. If they're just different people that you're thinking of where you've had something similar happen, then leave those comments as well. But yeah, thank you very much for watching, everybody. I hope you managed to glean something interesting out of this video about filmmaking at large, and how it doesn't always have to be a super nice and wholesome thing. Sometimes there are people out there that can make it a little bit shit. So, yeah, thank you very much for watching, everybody. Take care, everybody, and bye-bye.